Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Talk a little baseball right now. On Tuesday of this week, the Baseball Writers Association are going to announce on the MLB Network who the newest class of Hall of Famers will be for the Baseball Hall of Fame. And joining me right now to talk about that, he covers Major League Baseball for CBSSports.com and has some real good analysis on this field of candidates to go into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2019. Matt Snyder, at Matt Snyder CBS on Twitter, if you want to give him a follow. Matt Snyder joining me right now to talk a little Baseball Hall of Fame. Matt, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's good to have you on the show. So let's start with this. Who are the, in your mind, the no-brainer locks to get into the Hall of Fame this year?
I really think Edgar Martinez is going to make it. And I also think Mariano Rivera and Roy Halladay are definitely in. It's possible that we see Mussina, but he's going to be close. He might have to wait until next year. But I think that we have at least three that are, like, not 100% of the ballots, but I'm like 100% sure Rivera, Halladay, and Edgar get in.
I want to ask you about Edgar. We'll get into the other two in just a second, but about Edgar. Is he a guy that you yourself have felt should be in the Hall of Fame long ago? Is he a guy that you've backed for a number of years you feel he should be in? Or is your feeling that his trend of support, where he's been continuing to get more and more voters, and I know he got real close last year. He's in that 70% range where the past trends would seem to indicate he's going to get in. Is it more of a trend play by you, or is he a guy that you've believed in for a long, long time, or both?
I honestly can't even remember his first year on the ballot, how I felt about it. I didn't really start hardcore analyzing until 2011 when I got to CBS. Mm-hmm. And I feel like my majority of the time that I've been writing about this, I've been a yes on Edgar. He's probably not the greatest DH of all time, because I think you have to include like Frank Thomas, David Ortiz is arguably better. Jim Thome, maybe if you consider him too, but he's right there in the mix. And I know a lot of people get mad about designated hitters. They only play half the game. Well, I mean, we're putting closers in. A closer is a lot more of a specialization that has a lot less of an effect on the whole season as a designated hitter who bats three or four times every single game. Now, if you want to argue against some of the other closers that are in, okay, you can't really argue against Mariano Rivera, but Edgar Martinez is one of the best hitters in baseball history. If you look at as a well-rounded hitter, the slash line 312, 418 on base percentage, 515 slugging, that kind of a line, there aren't that many guys who have something like that, and everybody who's better than that is either in the Hall of Fame or named Manny Ramirez.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll get into the issues of Ramirez and others from the PED era in just a moment. But as long as we're talking about the guys you just named as sort of the no-brainers for this go-round, is Mariano Rivera the easiest closer choice that you've come across since, as you said, absolutely, you've started analyzing this in 2011?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you go from the argument of, closers are essentially failed starters, which Rivera is, it's true. Mm-hmm. There are some people who would advocate no closers, especially not in this day and age. Now, if you go back to, like, the Goose Gossage era, those guys threw over 100 innings a year. Now you're getting the guys throwing only 60 innings a year. So some of those people would be a hard no on Billy Wagner. Some of those people even were against Trevor Hoffman getting in. But Mariano Rivera is so head and shoulders above everybody else that even those hardcore stat guys who would have been against Hoffman say, yeah, Rivera's a yes, because of just how long he did it, how much better he was than everybody else, and his postseason. He might be the greatest postseason pitcher of all time if you don't – if you lump in starters and relievers, I guess you could say some starters worked more innings, but he threw a ton in the postseason. It impacted so many championships.
Yeah, and then Roy Halladay was the other name that you brought up, and obviously tragedy with Roy Halladay, the way that he passed away. But he's a guy. Regardless, I feel like a lot of times there are those stories that have that tragic ending, and for whatever reason, the Hall of Fame candidacy of somebody where that happens picks up steam because of you want to have some sort of feel good to this whole story. Halladay doesn't really fit that category from the standpoint of he would probably be going in even if at this early juncture, even if his life story hadn't ended the way it did.
Yeah, I was there the day he retired at the winter meetings in Orlando, and the first thing I did was write about how he's absolutely a Hall of Famer. I did get some pushback on that on Twitter, like, oh, only 203 wins, which is ridiculous in this era. I mean, wins. Yeah. Guys don't start there as much. They don't pitch. I mean, his resume, a two-time Cy Young Award winner, runner-up twice. He's got the playoff no-no in his first playoff start. Just all those complete games, all those innings pitched. And as I just wrote this past week, I don't think we have to do this with everybody for the Hall of Fame when you say that it factor, when you look at somebody, you just know. I don't think that's the established standard, but he was one of those guys that you did. When you were watching him pitch, when he was in his prime, you just knew he was that guy. He was that kind of starting pitcher that anybody going up to face up against him with the Blue Jays or the Phillies, oh, man, that's a tall order today because we've got to face Doc Halliday.
Yeah, and yeah, I think you bring up a great point when you know you snickered about the 203 wins, and I'm kind of with you. We're the way the game's evolved. I feel like some of those benchmarks that used to exist, not just for wins, but even for some of the power numbers and things like that, because of the way the game has sort of evolved. How does that make it in terms of filling out a ballot now? And what are those? The arguments, are there? Do you feel like there are fewer and fewer voters who get wrapped up in some of those volume stats and those stat benchmarks and are more about the maybe the efficiency of a player or just the eye test of how great they were?
Yeah, a few years ago, after the what I thought was an embarrassing vote when nobody got in, the Hall of Fame culled some voters, a lot of them. Then you get into the point where they say if you haven't covered, it used to be a lifetime privilege to vote. Now it's if you haven't covered the sport for whatever many years, I'd have to look it up, you lose your vote. And now that they've started to do it more, and some of the old guard is kind of retiring, or, you know, it's sad to say it this way, but it is dying off. And then you get a younger, newer generation where we're looking a lot more at WAR. I think WAR is going to be a lot more of a driver, and Jay Jaffe's Jaws system. I use those. I'm not religious about it, but I do use those because I'm going to print this week what my ballot would have been. I've only been in the BBWA for 4 years, so I have a few more to wait. But what this year, for example, the WAR people have like Larry Walker and Scott Rolen above like Sammy Sosa and Gary Sheffield. And for somebody who was in his late teens and early 20s watching those four players, I can't wrap my head around saying Scott Rolen and Larry Walker were a bigger deal than Gary Sheffield and Sammy Sosa. Now, I know the PED ties might switch it for some people, but there are some new school voters who vote for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, but still have Walker and Rolen above Sosa and Sheffield, and that's just not where I would be.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Clemens and Barry Bonds, Matt. We're talking to Matt Snyder, covers MLB for CBSSports.com. Handicap their eventual inclusion in the Hall of Fame, and where are we at right now in terms of their number of years that they still have left on the ballot?
They're both in year 7. I'm really, really interested to see. They're usually within a percentage point of each other. Frankly, I have no idea how anybody votes for one but not the other, but we have guys who vote for Jeff Clemens, and we have guys who vote for Jeff Bonds. It's lunacy to me. But anyway, they were in the 56-57 percentage range last year. They need to get to 75. This is year 7. So there's 3 more after this. If they get, I mean, it's reasonable to think they could get over 60 this year, and we're clearing names. Like Fred McGriff's coming off because it's his last year. Edgar Rivera and Holliday are coming off because they're all 3 going to get in. Maybe Mussina comes off if he gets in. Only Derek Jeter next year is definite to get in. So now there's more names cleared off. Now there's more spots. Maybe more people start thinking about Clemens and Bonds, and that trickles down to Schilling too. I think that they're going to get in, maybe in their 10th year, as with the voting body gets more and more new school and more names get cleared off the ballot, because next year is Jeter. Like I said, the year after that, the best players on the ballot are like Tim Hudson and Mark Burley. So we're clearing spots off the ballot here. I think they're going to do it. And I'll say this, too. If they don't make it to the BBWAA, they're never getting in, because no veterans committee comprised of current Hall of Famers is going to put them in, because that – you know, we've seen the statement Joe Morgan put out. They really don't want Bonds and Clemens in there.
Right.
So they have to get in via the writers.
Matt, last one before I let you go. Everybody's up in arms about this Harold Baines thing from the Veterans Committee or whatever we're calling that group of 16 voters letting Harold Baines in. And, I mean, is there a... Is there a new line, I guess, for what's considered a Hall of Fame? If Harold Baines goes in, all of a sudden you're talking about like guys you've mentioned in this conversation, Roland and Walker, guys like Lance Berkman, quite honestly, who I think
Berkman's
was
better than Baines.
Berkman better than Baines, and I think there's going to be a half dozen other names that if you and I were sitting here long enough, we could come up with names. Does that become a new line, or do we all kind of know what the deal is and go, no, this is an outlier here? There is still a criteria and a benchmark that you need to be above to be a Hall of Famer.
Something that Jay Jaffe's jaw system has done, and it's on baseballreference.com, along with WAR, is you can line up every guy that's in the Hall of Fame by position and say, here's the average Hall of Famer. And the line of thinking then goes, if a player's above the average Hall of Famer, he should be in. If he's below the average Hall of Famer, then even if he's better than Harold Baines, it doesn't mean we have to put everybody in. So like the line shouldn't be whoever the worst Hall of Famer is, everybody better gets in, because then you're still tarnishing the legacy of the Hall. It should be, and Jay's done this for years, that's why I keep giving him credit. He's always preached, you should be trying to bring up the standard of the Hall of Fame, which means voting guys who are above the average Hall of Famer, but not guys who are below the average Hall of Famer.
That's a good way to look at it. Matt Snyder, CBSSports.com. Should be interesting when the names get announced on Tuesday, no doubt about that. And to your point, Matt, I think there will be just as many people seeing the movement of Bonds and Clemens as there will be the actual class that goes in. But I feel like it's been that way for a few years now. So we'll certainly be looking at that on Tuesday. Matt Snyder, he's on Twitter. He is at Matt Snyder CBS on Twitter. So give him a follow, especially this week with baseball sure to be in the news. Hey, Matt, appreciate the time, man. We'll do it again down the road. Thanks.
Sure thing. Have a good one.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.